I'm Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage.
I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Dangerously cold temperatures are blanketing the eastern two-thirds of the country this Christmas Eve. Some areas are experiencing blizzard conditions. In Buffalo, the city and its surrounding county are under a driving ban. The airport is closed until Monday morning. New York Governor Kathy Hochul says don't go out.
We're going to continue to keep warming centers open, encourage people to stay home. Roads are closed throughout western New York and will be probably through Christmas Day.
National Weather Service forecaster Ashton Robinson Cook says it's very cold in places that aren't used to such temperatures.
These types of weather conditions will continue for the Mid-Atlantic. Slightly warmer there in the Carolinas and down through Florida, but still below freezing way down south all the way through central Florida.
Pipes are freezing and bursting in Arkansas, says KTHTV's Ian Russell.
Today's the second call, and we've done had a couple more added on us since we've been here.
And they're not alone. Plenty of people woke up to burst pipes, cold water, and other issues caused by the cold weather, including the Wadleys.
Well, my husband woke up and tried to use the hot water and notified me we did not have hot water. No, this has never happened before.
No hot water to start the day isn't ideal. That's where Richard and Nicholas come in. Inside to the attic, not much warmer than outside.
And migrants are looking for warmth, says CBS's Jeff Glore.
El Paso opened an emergency shelter with 1,000 cots inside its convention center. But hundreds of migrants could be left out in the cold since the partially federally funded shelter is open only to migrants who've already been processed by the Border Patrol. El Paso officials say they're working with churches and other nonprofit organizations to shelter more migrants who have not been processed.
Pope Francis led 7,000 worshipers at the traditional Christmas Eve Mass in St. Peter's Basilica. The cold weather and storms have been about the only good news for stores this disappointing holiday season. Retail analyst Bert Flickinger says people bought for needs, not wants.
The retail sales impact from the storm were spectacular. The grocery stores were packed, as one would expect, but apparel, which was suffering in the department stores and the specialty stores, with storm supplies, socks, sweaters.
A Maricopa County, Arizona Superior Court judge has thrown out Republican Carrie Lake's challenge of her defeat in the governor's race to Democrat Katie Hobbs. The judge rejected Lake's claim that problems with some ballot printers were the result of intentional misconduct. He said no clear or convincing evidence exists of that. This is CBS News.
This hour's newscast is presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rock.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Collada of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy-efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us. The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Merry Hump Day, the last live edition before the Christmas celebration, or Hanukkah, or whatever you celebrate up around here. We celebrate fine guests like our current, soon to be joining us live via phone. He is John Nichols from The Nation. John, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates. How you doing, man?
Hey, John.
Wow, doc. Hey, brothers. Doctor my eyes, man. What a nice intro for this moment in our history.
John,
we've seen too much.
I think so, man.
John, I'd play a little Christmas music for you, but in light of, you know, how the last heartless station ingloriously left the airwaves, it's sort of a bad thing around here. We don't play Christmas music much.
Really? Oh, yeah, because it's like in the old Soviet Union when they went to certain kind of classical music, right? You knew something really bad had happened.
Right.
Now, in this case, I love Christmas music, so I got no trouble with it. And I don't want to join in your, you know, fruitless boycott of it. But I will tell you that, you know, if it's not Christmas, it should be Jackson Brown.
Well, John, let me ask you. We were just playing a little, you know, radio game, but what do you want for Christmas? Well, what I really wanted for Christmas was a Trump indictment, but we got criminal referrals. I'd like to see the man's taxes. Those should be coming in short order. And if Tony Evers could just bring my little buddy Dominic some legal buds, he'd be doing just fine. So, well, John, what do you want for Christmas, and what's realistic, sir?
Oh, well, you see, that's a two. Of course, I want peace in Ukraine. All right. I would take that because I think that would be a very nice way to play things out for the year. And if I could do one other thing, if I get to be greedy, I put peace in Ukraine in my stocking under the tree. I'd like to tax billionaires at the same level we did during World War II and into the 1950s, about 92-95%. So you give me those, I'll take, you know, I'll have a Bud Light.
You know, an attitude like that's going to get your Twitter account canceled, John Nichols.
No. If you own Twitter, you know, I say nice things about you, but I'm not sure he's even in charge anymore.
But he is.
Have a poll where the people voted that he should give it up?
Well, we don't poll because they would tell us to replace Dom, and we don't want to hear that.
I don't believe it for a minute.
I don't know about that, man. I've been seeing some of those results coming in, and Dom's looking pretty strong in the suburbs.
Well, John, let me ask you. Legalized marijuana, Tony claims, and new reporting says, we could get legalized marijuana for Christmas, maybe by next year. But I'm a little suspicious, John. I know that every time Tony Evers puts something in the budget, Republicans just put the budget in the shredder.
Yeah, I mean,
and hand it back to them. I mean, we're not getting legalized marijuana. We get bubkis, except tax cuts for the rich, probably.
Well, the problem is, you know, it's like I think you'd have to be smoking something to think that a governor on his own could get you legalized marijuana. I wish he could. But until you get Robin Voss, you know, to go with you to Bonnaroo and to kind of open his eyes to recognize the possibilities, I think you got a problem. Because Robin Voss has made it very clear that he's just not a party guy. You know, I mean, somebody, what was the mistake along the way? Didn't he? Where did Robin Voss go to college? Was it Whitewater?
He was college roommates with Reince Priebus, I believe. They were young Republicans at Whitewater, right? Weren't they? And Paul Ryan, yeah, I think, was also colleagues at the time.
No, Ryan was over to Ohio. Oh, Ryan went to Ohio, and I know.
My bad.
Yeah, it's okay. But I'm just thinking, like, didn't somebody, like, give him a Traffic album or a Grateful Dead album?
John, it is frustrating, and we read some of the reporting today. Obviously, yeah. Illinois, Michigan, they're legal recreational marijuana there. Minnesota's going to do it in May. But here we have, yep. You know, in Wisconsin, an island in the Midwest, and Robin Voss and Republicans. Even with the polling, I think Marquette said 83% are down. Citizens of Wisconsin are polled are down with legal medicinal marijuana, and like 60-some percent sure. were down for recreational. So it's not like the demand isn't there. It is, John, is it so callous and calculated that it's just a matter of whatever legal weed, you know, lobby starts cutting checks to the Republicans? I mean, is that what it takes?
Oh, yeah, I think it would really help. Am I supposed to lie to people or what? I mean, if we're going to be honest with folks, right, the Republican Party has made it pretty clear that it responds to money. That is sort of the whole point of the modern Republican Party, aside from some creepy authoritarian tendencies that have come into play recently. But yeah, I hate to say that, but yes, that probably would help if you're really calculating these things out. The other thing that would of course solve the problem, and we unfortunately don't have it, is a referendum system. You know, in other states where you're allowed to put this on the ballot, of course it wins. People vote for it. They even vote for it in, like, the Dakotas. And so, yeah, it would win in Wisconsin overwhelmingly. And the problem is that we lack that avenue. And so, ultimately, if you want to get to progress on a host of issues, that includes legalization of marijuana, but you've run a whole list of other issues, you're going to have to change the makeup of the legislature. And the only way that's going to happen is if you undo gerrymandering. The only way undoing gerrymandering will happen is if progressives take control of the state Supreme Court and they get a redistricting case and actually decide it as it should be decided, which is to let the voters pick their officials rather than letting the officials pick their voters.
John Nichols, I love that notion that we perhaps could cast upon those we elected what we would want them to do instead of the other way around. Just to correct
crazy,
the record.
I know.
When Priebus and Voss were in school together, college roommates at UW-Whitewater, so was Andy Speth, Paul Ryan's chief of staff. That's probably where I had the bad illusion from. And Jim Ladwick,
yeah, Paul,
the Racine County executive.
But I think Paul went to Miami of Ohio. And the last question I have is where Brian Schimming, the new chairman of the Republican Party, went. And I'm not clear on that, but I think he might have gone to Whitewater, too.
Hmm.
So there's a Whitewater thing here in play.
Well, Whitewater, all the finest cool broadcasters cool. come from UW La Crosse, I hear, John.
I totally have heard that. I mean, it's pretty well written. It's writ large in the stars. But I'm just telling you that what was there? I mean, Whitewater had to have a record store in its day. And again, I'm going to go to my point. You know, like, why didn't someone play the Grateful Dead for these guys?
Well, here's,
you know, why didn't they introduce them to, you know, some alternative way of looking at things, at which point they would say, yeah, I fooled around a little in my youth, and I think it's fine if we legalize marijuana.
Well, John, they apparently hung out, did a lot of on-campus political things, young Republicans that they were, and as Robin Voss said, they say it's something in the water. As Reince would say, it's probably something in the beer, you know, that made them all so political.
Very proud of Wisconsin, the beer state, you know, and I totally respect that part of our legacy. But, you know, again, I think it would have been very good for them if they had kind of mixed it up a little, right?
If they had known us in college, John, this state would be much cooler.
That's all I'm trying to tell you. You know, I just think this isn't a very complicated thing, except that it is affecting policymaking. And yeah. I fear, my friends, that your cute little fantasy about getting legalized marijuana in Wisconsin is getting upset by the reality that Robin Voss says no. And at this point, you know, Tony Evers can prevent Robin Voss from doing bad things, but he can't make Robin Voss do good things, as best I can tell.
Well, John, what do you see the math, the outcome on the budget? I mean, Tony Evers put his budget out there the first time. Republicans trashed it, and then he vetoed theirs and sort of Frankensteined it into something a little bit better. Last time around, he didn't even Frankenstein it, John. He just signed off on the Republican budget and declared victory. John, if you want something, I know they call it log rolling, but you got to negotiate. You got to a little this for that. Yeah. I mean, Donald Trump teach these boys nothing, John?
Well, no, I think Donald Trump taught him plenty. That's the problem. But the challenge that we've got is that, you know, when the last budget came down, Wisconsin was in a very, you know, complicated situation. We kind of were still struggling through COVID. We had some revenues coming in, which was to the good, but we also had a lot of challenges. And I think there was a general sense of, you know, let's not fight. Let's try and get something together here and go for it. And that's, I think, where Evers went. It ultimately proved to be very smart politically because he was reelected by a much wider margin than he was initially elected by in a very complex, very intense election. So politically, he probably made the right move. Practically, you know, I think that we're now at a point where a lot of things are coming to a head. And from Evers' standpoint, it's a good argument now for fighting this out. And again, it's kind of that model that I think we know always in a situation where you're disempowered, where you don't have the full authority that you would like to have. What you have to do in that situation is use the bully pulpit. You have to talk to the people of Wisconsin, not just, you know, live in the Madison bubble, but go beyond it and really push hard for, you know, the policies that you favor. And I think if Evers, with the mandate that he got in the 2022 election, if he were to go out there and really, you know, talk it up, like fight hard for a budget vision, it's not necessarily that he would get it easily, but he might get more of what he wants. And also, remember, if we're talking about the Supreme Court race, this possibility that control of the Supreme Court shifts to a more enlightened majority, and that more enlightened majority chooses to take up the issue of gerrymandering redistricting, then you might have a situation in 2024 where the vision that Tony Evers has put out as governor could be part of a statewide election contest in which possibly Democrats could win. And so there's no loss in fighting at this point. In fact, there's a lot of benefits of fighting for an agenda that, you know, is rooted in economic and social and racial justice, and that has popular issues like legalization of marijuana as a part of it.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That's John Nichols from The Nation and the Cap Times friend of ours joining us. John, thank you for doing so. I want to get your sense before we head out to the break here. The January 6th committee referred criminal referrals for Donald Trump and Eastman, but also for some Congress folks, Jim Jordan, Andy Biggs, Scott Perry, and what, the potential incoming Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. Yeah. Now, Kevin McCarthy is going to what? Put people on the ethics committee that are going to investigate him. What's your thought on the work that January 6th has done so far and where these referrals go?
Do you want to go after the break? Do you want to keep going or not?
We got 2 minutes here, man. We'll go after the break as well.
How much time you've got. If you want to, we can. I'm glad to come back and give you a longer explanation.
But yeah, I'll come back after the break as well. We got 2 minutes in this segment yet. What about the ethics referrals for the Congress folks?
It's the dumbest thing I ever heard, right? You know, sort of like, it's like you come down and you say, well, you know, Kevin McCarthy refused to cooperate with this committee, and he needs to be held to account by the ethics committee. Excellent. Good idea. Finally, we're going to crack down on Kevin McCarthy. By the way, who's going to be the next Speaker of the House? Oh, that's probably going to be Kevin McCarthy. What's the first thing he's going to do? Oh, he'll appoint the Republicans on the Ethics Committee and the person who will be chairman of the Ethics Committee. So, what's that going to mean? What it means is nothing will happen. And so while I think it's appropriate to have done the referral, they should have done that referral back in the summer when McCarthy and when other people were refusing to cooperate. They should have put it into the Ethics Committee immediately. Even that was unlikely to get much action. But doing it at this point is just an exercise in futility, I hate to say. Because I just don't think Kevin McCarthy is not the smartest politician I've ever dealt with. But even Kevin McCarthy is smart enough not to put somebody on the Ethics Committee that's going to crack down on Kevin McCarthy.
Well, you're presuming, John Nichols, that Kevin McCarthy's got the votes, and I'm not convinced. I am convinced. I'd like to talk more. John, you got a few more minutes for us?
Yeah, so if we're going to talk Kevin McCarthy, I'm first in line, man.
Well, you are indeed first in queue. John Nichols from The Nation. He's a friend of ours, having a little Christmas wish list. If Santa would only bring us everything on the list this year, John, I'd be a happy camper. Come back. You'll be a happy camper. More of the Devils and more of John Nichols. And you, perhaps, as well. 844-967-2789.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote, get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
It is the Monday after the first Packers game, and I think everyone right now is licking their wounds.
But I do love that you're leading with "The Bears Still Suck" as the intro song. I mean, we're already on to week two.
Why are we not good at the season opener?
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
A wind chill advisory continues until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Partly cloudy skies tonight with lows around 1 below. West winds 15 to 20 miles an hour. High of 9 above tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sun. Chance for snow showers tomorrow night, 5 above, overcast. About an inch of snow tomorrow night through Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height, currently 7 above.
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. If you missed any of this fine program, you can go to civicmedia.us, click on the Shows tab, and listen to the Devil's Advocates. Also find us on Spotify, Apple, and Google.
Dominic, we've got the finest of guests. He's stuck around. He's John Nichols from The Nation, friend of ours. John, I got to ask you, the dates have been dropped for the big RNC event coming to Milwaukee. Dom's quite excited, I can tell. July 15th. Through the 18th of 2024, John, we're going to be the political center of the universe that summer. Yeah, like a summer and a half from now. John, you looking forward to the RNC or something else?
Well,
or no?
I certainly hope they come early to enjoy all the French Fête de Marquette type festivities on July 14th, right? Isn't that like a big Bastille Days and stuff like that? Where they storm the castles and
storm the Bastille, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I think they're going to wrap it up before Brady Street Days, most importantly.
Yeah, exactly. So they're going to fit it in. But I'm totally happy they're coming to Milwaukee. It makes me super happy. I probably not been as happy about a convention, you know, since Chicago 68, you know, because because the Republicans, in their genius, have chosen to come to a city that was actually governed for, you know, the better part of half the last century by socialists. So they're going to, you know, I'm hoping that the, you know, Milwaukee city government will have the wisdom to put those banners up by the flagpoles or by the, you know, light poles that say, you know, welcome to Milwaukee City of Socialism. Because I think the Republicans would really like that.
Yeah.
You know, they have little pictures of, you know, like Frank Zeidler and stuff around. You know, so I plan to enjoy it from that standpoint. Otherwise, you know, beyond that, I think that, you know, the Republican convention in Milwaukee is probably going to be very useful in one other way, which is it is going to remind Republicans in real time, it will remind Wisconsinites in real time of how Republicans operate and who they are. And usually having the convention in a state helps you politically, but looking at the current condition of the Republican Party, I think there's a pretty good chance that having them come to Milwaukee will absolutely convince Wisconsin not to vote Republican.
John Nichols, my friend Dominic's been putting forth a theory. See if you agree with it. The Republican Party's in disarray. John, Donald Trump's obviously soon to be an indicted former president and presidential candidate. Ron DeSantis got to be since in the blood and the water. There's about a dozen other Republicans that are going to jump in as soon as we get through the holidays, I suspect, John. And I'm wondering, do you think it's going to be a bloodbath? Because I think Trump may be a diminished candidate, but he's still going for blood. He's still going to chop Ron DeSantis off at the chestnuts, if you know what I'm saying, John.
Well, he's going to dress Ron DeSantis up in white boots and send him out to a flood. Look, the truth of the matter is that Donald Trump has only one thing he's good at. And this is true. He was never good at business. He went bankrupt 4 times. You know, he's certainly not good at being president. That was pretty obvious. But he is really good at shredding other Republicans. And the way he does it is he picks one at a time, right? He never goes against the whole field. He doesn't do like the, you know, Rambo situation where 20 people attack you and you fight them all off, right? No. He goes one at a time. He destroys one, and then he gets the next. And I can tell you, he loves doing that, and he is going to love doing it to Ron DeSantis. And the problem for Ron DeSantis is that DeSantis is pretty much as crazy as Trump, right? I mean, he's as bad as Trump on most issues. But the fact is that because the media and the Republican elites are talking about DeSantis as an alternative to Trump, DeSantis effectively becomes the establishment candidate. And there's nothing Trump likes better than hanging that label around somebody. So DeSantis is toast. I mean, in fact, when I look at DeSantis, do you know who I see?
Scott Walker.
Scott Kevin Walker. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The wanker.
I mean, there's always a governor that they get all excited about. And they say, oh, he took on labor. Or, you know, oh, he took on teachers in the midst of the COVID crisis. Somebody, they have all these like weird theories about something that's going to make somebody attractive nationally. It never translates, and it won't with DeSantis. In fact, the fact of the matter is that I expect you will see a number of people get in. That, by the way, guarantees Trump's victory because Trump has about 30-35% of Republicans. So if it's a multi-candidate field, he's coasting. But beyond that, he will have the joy of taking down these other candidates. And one of the funnest things is that, like, Mike Pompeo is going to run, and so Trump is going to actually get to attack a guy who served with Trump throughout Trump's entire administration. And he'll do it.
Oh, he will.
Of course he will. It didn't stop him from going after Mitch McConnell's wife, right? John Nichols from The Nation and The Cap Times. The last 3 minutes we got here, John, I want to get your sense. I saw that you wrote an article at The Nation basically saying that the Dems could have won the House but didn't. Yeah. I want to know what you what happened and what do you think they can do going forward?
That's a very good question. Look, I based the article off some new data that's come through from Inside Elections and from the Cook Report and others. They ran all the numbers. And what they found is that in the 5 seats that gave Republicans control of the House, remember, they've only got a tiny majority, but in the 5 seats that actually put them over the top, they had an advantage of about 6,700 votes. That's not a lot to shift, right? So what you realize is this is an incredibly close, you know, variation here, one that, that Democrats could have done better on just on basic elements. But here's where they really screwed up, and it's something that you guys know, and I think most of your listeners know, and that is they decided to run a very cautious race. They were scared that they were going to lose a lot of seats. And so they put all their resources into protecting incumbents, protecting, you know, like swing seats that they were pretty sure they had. And they pulled their money out of rural seats, especially seats like the 3rd District in Western Wisconsin, which I use as an example. And, you know, what they decided at the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which is, you know, actually the Democratic Screw Up Congressional Races Campaign Committee, that they were going to pull all the money out, pull all their support out of the 3rd District, because they didn't think Brad Fast could win. He wasn't exciting enough to them. And so did a lot of the other Democratic-oriented groups, PACs, et cetera. So Fast was out, left out there in a distinct disadvantage. He was outspent by about $5 million, overwhelmingly, you know, outgunned. And yet, when the votes were counted, he got over 48% of the vote. He ran better than some of the Republicans or some of the Democrats in targeted races. And so if we understand that, and if we look also at similar races in Oregon, in Western Montana, in Texas, what you realize is that the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has a rural problem. They're scared of rural districts. They don't understand them. They pull their money out. They lose, but they lose narrowly. And if they had just had their resources there, they would have won those seats. And if Brad Pfaff and a handful of other people had won the victories that were certainly within reach, they would be in Congress right now, and or headed to Congress, and Democrats would have their majority.
And then we might know that Kevin McCarthy was not going to be the speaker. Now we got to wonder. John Nichols, don't have to wonder. We'll look forward to having you back in the new year, maybe around January 3rd, the time they won't vote for Kevin McCarthy as speaker. Merry Christmas, John. We'll talk real soon. The Happier Happy Hour is next. Stick around, everyone.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief, at least 19 people have died in the winter storms that have swept the nation this week. In New York, Governor Kathy Hochul says the roads aren't safe even for first responders.
It is absolutely dangerous for anyone to be on the roads, and that includes our emergency vehicles.
Pretty much wherever you go on the East Coast, it's brutally cold, says National Weather Service forecaster Ashton Robinson Cook.
It's slightly warmer the farther south you go, but generally speaking, it's cold and blustery throughout most of the East Coast region.
Utilities across the eastern half of the country are urging customers to temporarily cut back on their power use. PJM Interconnections asked 65 million customers in 13 states to conserve electricity into Christmas morning. Inflation is making the price of tamales, a holiday staple for some families, hot this year, says this woman in East L.A.
$30 a dozen. Years past, I remember I used to get them for $10 a dozen.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha, live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
Doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Thursdays at 11:30, we are joined by Dr. Michael McCutcheon, who is a psychologist, a lecturer, and additionally, he's won 10,000 fantasy football leagues and loves to help people make easy, free money. Dr. Mike fixes your life and your lineup.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now.
Facts,
Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to The Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a while, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a while, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Veterans, whatever you're going through, don't wait. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates, a Merry Hump Day Happier Happy Hour. Dom, I discuss with you off air. Not publicly. I thought about ducking out early, you know, heading out to the Christmas holiday. In lieu of the fact, this is the last live Devils you're going to hear between now and when Santa comes down the chimney. And, you know, it is lightly snowing here in the Madison area, getting a little slick. So I am looking out with great interest at the traffic patterns. And a dude just rolled by, silver Mazda Miata. Top down, baby. Top down. Yeah. That guy's in the holiday spirit, and you all will be in the holiday spirit when I introduce our next fine guest. He is James Santel. Want to thank Jim John Nichols from The Nation in the last hour. Jim Santel, welcome back. The returning champ, former U.S. attorney, and the host of Morning Cannolis most Saturdays, but not on Christmas Eve, but every other Saturday. Jim's good for a damn good show, 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturdays. Jim, welcome back.
Hey, Jim. I am pleased and honored to be with you yet again, both of you. Thanks for inviting me back.
Well, all I wanted for Christmas was some legal weed and Donald Trump's taxes. And I might get the latter, at least, you know, legal in this jurisdiction, but I might get the latter. Jim, Donald Trump's taxes, they're oozing out, are they not? The House Ways and Means Committee has voted to release the taxes. I can't wait, Jim.
Right. This is after a years-long battle among the courts, and including the Supreme Court, and according, of course, of all the reporting on this, with Donald's attorneys trying to keep this from happening. Eventually, the United States Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals of the D.C. Circuit, saying no, there is a statute that requires that these be produced to the House Ways and Means Committee. That's what's happened. And right now, we haven't seen the final versions of them, but they're redacting some of the sensitive information, like social security numbers and other identifying information. We've got an awful lot of indication about what those taxes do show, because both of the committees that are involved in this have in their reports already, that there are some significant findings, not only about what he did and did not pay, but also curiously, even before you get to that, about the apparent suspension inside the Department of Treasury of this program that attaches to every other president in recent times, to do an audit of that president's taxes. That didn't happen over the first 2 years of this presidency. We don't know why yet, but it is certainly peculiar and this should be the source of more focus, not only by journalists, but also by congressional committees trying to figure out what happened here. Treasury Secretary at some point should be able to look back and also say what happened historically inside her own agency.
Jim, the failure to audit the former president, despite the fact that was his claim, that was his ongoing claim, his rationale for not releasing his taxes. But I understand a Democrat made the request formally in a House committee, and it was only at that time that the IRS made the request of Trump the very same day, and they assigned one agent. And apparently, Donald Trump has very convoluted financials. Many pass-throughs. And it was described as perhaps by reporting at the Washington Post, he is too big to audit, too complicated, that the auditor, the IRS agent, was effectively outgunned by the complexity. But they could still point towards a number of different discrepancies, things like claims of $500,000 in charitable contributions made in cash each tax year. That's a lot of cash, right? Don't you have to substantiate cash contributions, Jim?
You do, and there are all sorts of rules that apply to you and to Dom and to me and everybody else who's listening to the show right now. But apparently the former president ran roughshod over that being among them. The other significant part of this, of course, we have seen the voluminous boxes being brought into the House committee that's looking at all this. There are four of them. And again, that goes to the substantiation issue. With something this extravagant and this huge, you would anticipate that the substantiation for things like charitable contributions, all these other things, all these other credits you may have been taking, property taxes being used as business expenses, all that's got to be supported by other documents. Highly unlikely that these were sufficiently supported if it's a whopping four banker's boxes that are now produced after all of this time. So this is another major issue that not only should the House committees be looking at, but frankly, Treasury Department too, looking at all this and saying, gosh, where's the substantiation for all of this? Charitable contributions. We've talked in this program about the Silver Springs property, classified it as a personal residence, reclassified it as investment property. All these kinds of things are now going to be out there in the public, presumably for all of us to take a look at. The IRS should likewise be, if it hasn't already, be doing a very close scrub on all of this.
And Jim, the man hardly ever pays taxes. And if you look, and I'm only going by the reporting at this point, but effectively, he hardly ever makes any money net. He continuously, like 12 of 15 tax years, lost his ass, like a good year for the guy. This supposed billionaire was a positive $4 million, at least on what he claimed on his taxes. Jim, this does not seem to be the financial profile of a guy who claims to be worth $10 billion.
Not at all. 2019, $4.4 million, pays $133,000 in taxes. That may be one of the legitimate years among all of these. But as you say, you go back, negative income in 2015 and 16, when he's running for the presidency, 2017, first year in office, also negative income, no federal taxes paid during that period of time. $24.3 million in 2018, pays about $1 million. So there are variations here. But again, that is the other big takeaway on the initial reports from the committees, that this man who has indicated that he is this super businessman who has been operating all of these entities of his to great success, plainly not reflected in what we have seen so far.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, our friend, joining us once again. Jim, always a pleasure to be with you, man. The taxes are what the taxes are, you know, and I assume that's, I guess, my problem. I assume that the job will get done, that the IRS is doing their job. The House Ways and Means Committee, you know, started this investigation, started this program to look at this. I mean, and specifically, doesn't this kind of justify what their efforts are? If you have the IRS who's supposed to be doing an audit didn't do it. And let's be honest, we all know, just like McConnell said, we know who's responsible for January 6th. We all know why that didn't happen. It was Trump's person in charge, and they were sandbagging it, man. They were slow walking this thing and trying to, keep it out of the public light this entire time. But what happens to the IRS as an organization? Is this codified into law? Is just a suggestion? I mean, who is responsible? Who pays the price for them not doing their job?
Right. And so I mentioned already that even though she wasn't the Secretary of the Treasury at the time, Janet Yellen right now should be, if she hasn't already had some very difficult meetings with some of her staff, asking what has gone on here. There should be internal reviews. But again, that's the other reason why we have these House committees. Two reasons. One is oversight, plainly, to determine whether or not there are presidents and other officials in the public domain are behaving as they should. Secondarily, and that is the other reason for doing this, what legislation needs to be put in place? Does this protocol inside the Department of Treasury for regular annual audits of the president's taxes, does that need to be codified, strengthened by legislation that compels the Department of Treasury to do it? It's not simply an internal practice or procedure. That should happen as well. Concern again about the fact that as we sit here on the 21st of December, this Congress goes out of business in 10 days, and the incoming chair of the House Ways and Means Committee will pursue that. Those legislative changes should take place, as should, again, the public scrutiny of all of this. And again, the Secretary of the Treasury herself should be saying, gee, we need to do better than this in the future.
Jim, there's lots of ways to game the system. And since this has come out, one of my thoughts, I hearken back to the casino. If you're going to launder money, a casino is a good way to do it. And I think Donald Trump is a shady character. I think perhaps he was engaged in some of those kinds of things. Now, I can't prove any of that, but this is just kind of what goes on in my head when I see these kinds of tracks in the snow, let's put it that way. And my understanding is that he was carrying perhaps almost $1 billion of loss carry forward from what he claimed from the casino. And if that was, is there any way to go back and relook and take a sharper look? Because I'm not convinced maybe any of this has been done. If he was doing money laundering for some Russian gangsters at the, in the Jersey casino, taking money off the top or getting kickbacks and paid from there, then on top of it all, claiming a loss that he, hoists upon the American people, because now any revenue he has, he doesn't have to pay taxes on because he has this on the books loss. Is that something that the IRS could go back and look at if they chose to?
Yes, yes, and yes. The answer is they should go back and look at if they have not already done that or begun to do that based upon the disclosures they've just made. And this is, again, what we talked about a lot on this fine program, which is follow the money, right? Those records are still out there. This is not going back to records in the 1940s or 50s that are paper and they probably have now been converted into electronic form. But those materials are out there. They're relatively recent transactions. And to the extent that there is a criminal investigation of tax issues, which should not be discounted here either, a grand jury can get this information. U.S. Attorney's Office can get this information. You go back, you subpoena bank records to try to find out what happened. You subpoena casinos, if you will, to get their reports on the things that they have done with Donald Trump and others. You can put this together. Is it painstaking? Is it fun to do? Well, maybe accountants would say it's fun to do. I wouldn't. But nonetheless, it can be done effectively. And even in 2021, it can all be reconstructed. Yes.
Jim, we're sneaking to break. I hope you stick around. But much like the January 6th committee made criminal referrals against the former president to the Department of Justice, is it now the Ways and Means Committee that will provide these documents back to the federal government and suggest that the IRS look into some of these cash donations, let's say, or yes, this very questionable use of a non-appraisal certified value to claim this massive multi-million-dollar tax loss? I mean, Jim, who investigates next? And be brief, counselor.
Everybody does, and everybody's on top of this, and I can chat more about that right after the break as well.
Well, I hope it's going to hurt for the former president. That's what I wish for Christmas. Somebody, goes all Grinch on his ass, like the House Ways and Means Committee, or maybe our buddy, Jim Santel. Come back. More of us, more of him, more of you, more devils.
Nobody knows more about taxes than I do.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Join Max Inc. Radio this New Year's Eve as we present live at thespaceship.tv. Max Inc. Radio will broadcast live from the spaceship.tv studios 6 p.m. to midnight, plus live performances from the Civil Engineers. Linda and the Zeros. Porky's Groove Machine.
Who's there? The Spice Girls. Muy caliente.
Oh, they're not hitting. Live streaming video at thespaceship.tv and live on this civic media station. Let's party New Year's Eve starting at 6 p.m. live from thespaceship.tv. Happy New Year's from Civic Media and Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit stoptextsstoprex.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A wind chill advisory continues until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Lows level off around 1 below tonight under mainly clear skies. Winds out of the west 15 to 20 miles an hour. Highs around 8 above tomorrow. Snow likely tomorrow night. Lows around 5 above, cloudy. About an inch of snow tomorrow night through Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently 7 above.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, our friend, sticking around for one more segment. Thank you for doing so, Jim. Talking about Donald Trump's taxes and his efforts over the years financially. How far back does the statute of limitation goes for? Can it go for fraud? If we're talking about some of these casinos, some of the stuff happened back in the 90s, for example. How far back could prosecutors go?
Sure. Depending upon how you charge the case, there are 5-year statute of limitations. There are 10-year statute of limitations, all kinds of things out there. So it again, determines, it's dependent upon the particular statute that you charge. When you do these cases, however, you don't begin, you certainly look at that, but you want to go back as far as you possibly can to get a sense of again, the history of these kinds of cases. So right before the break, we were chatting about just that between Mike and you and I. And, you know, the notion is that if the IRS has already been doing an investigation of this, it's got all of those for the past 20, 30, 40 years. You're not going to go back and charge all those, but you're going to get a sense of what the records indicate. And plainly, 1 year does reflect on the next year. And so all of that can be looked at by the IRS as they pursue this. Just as a footnote to the question that Mike and I were chatting out right before the break, the IRS doesn't need the House committee to send these things back to the IRS to say, look at them again. IRS should be taking a look at these, all of these right now. But all of this, once again, can be the focus of a grand jury investigation by an IRS internal audit, if that has not already been done, and in a referral to the Department of Justice for criminal prosecution, if in fact there has been a knowing and willful evasion of taxes, false statements, misreporting, all these kinds of things are subject to prosecution under the federal criminal code.
Jim, Al Capone was a pretty bad man, but ultimately went to prison because of tax evasion. It's not sexy, but it's got teeth, these tax prosecutions potentially. Jim, you know I care a lot about the actions of the former president in regards to January 6th. But in terms of actually making it stick, when you've got a man exposed in this way, and so clearly he's got questionable tax practices, which add up to something more than a light slap on the wrist, if you know what I'm saying, Jim.
Right.
They add up to crimes. Right. Can you envision who would prosecute? I get that the IRS should be investigating, but I mean, who do you call? Do you call the DOJ and say, we've got a clear tax felon or someone that's committed these alleged crimes? Who lays the lumber then, Jim?
Sure, yes. And so the answer is precisely that. The IRS is a client agency of the Department of Justice. You happen to be talking to a former criminal prosecutor. I prosecuted federal tax cases in the time that I was a U.S. attorney and an assistant U.S. attorney. And that's who does it around the country. In this particular case, you might want to decide venue. Is it the Southern District of New York? Because that's where much of this happened. Could also be the District of Columbia, perhaps other places as well. And to your point about how this goes forward, the answer is yes. You look at all of this, and the beauty, if you will, if you want to describe in this human tragedy in that way, is that you don't need the human witnesses to come in. I think, Mike, where you were going with your comment is the papers will say it all. Again, it won't be very exciting. It won't be the kind of thing that will grab headlines with glossy pictures. But when documents, as Dom and I were just chatting, documents tell you that there was income here, no income there, valuations made at some levels of properties here, different there. The documents speak. And all you need to have is a document custodian come in and say, those are true and accurate reports. And you've got your prosecution. You likely have your conviction as well. You can make the recent example of this, of course, is the criminal state conviction of the Trump Organization in Manhattan. That's the case again. Yes, you've got Alan Weisselberg, but you had an awful lot of documents here that's told the story that Weisselberg corroborated. That's what can happen here based upon what we've seen to this point.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney. 3 more minutes left in the segment. Thanks again, man. Stefan Pasentino. Yes. This was Cassidy Hutchinson's initial attorney. He has apparently taken a leave from the Milwaukee-based law firm Michael Best and Friedrich for apparently instructing Cassidy Hutchinson to mislead the committee. Now, he denies it, Jim, but he's been wiped off the web page of Michael Best. What's your thought there, sir?
Sure. When I was in law school, we were told repeatedly, had to take all kinds of courses on ethics based upon all the bad things that the lawyers did in the Watergate scandal, right? John Dean and many others, including the attorney general. I would offer that we may now be in another situation like that, where future law students are going to be obliged to take more courses based upon the kinds of things that this fellow did, Stefan Pasentino. And as I look at the summary, which is what we've got, this 154-page summary, I identify at least 3, if not 4, situations where he is suborning perjury of Cassidy Hutchinson, and easily 3 other ethics violations. He tells her that she does not, in fact, have to say anything other than, I don't recall, even though she does recall. That is telling someone to lie. That is a crime. And yes, you can prosecute that. And even though I often say perjury is tough to prosecute, curiously, suborning perjury is actually easier to prosecute, because all you do is a witness or two to say, yes, he told me to lie. He also says, of course, that when Hutchinson comes back and she says, you know, I want to correct my testimony. He says, no, they don't know what they don't know. Just keep it the same. Goes on to say that when there's some testimony about casting the president in bad light, he says, no, we want to go there. That's telling the witness to lie. And that's a crime in America. Also, this business of giving her the possibility of getting a financially very comfortable job, that's called witness tampering. That's also obstruction of justice. He's in a lot of trouble. And we haven't even talked about the ethics violations regarding her telling him not to share information with other witnesses out there. He did that. He shared it with the press, absent her instructions, and also refused to tell her where the money is coming from. Huge ethics violations. If I were Mr. Pasentino right now, MAGA, making attorneys get attorneys. Absolutely. He should be in position right now.
Jim Santel, the real crime. We won't be sharing morning cannolis on Christmas Eve morning, Saturday mornings, morning cannolis with Jim Santel, 9 to 11. Except this week, you'll get a best of edition. But back soon, James Santel, the returning champ. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas, my friend.
Thank you. Merry Christmas, friends. Happy holidays to everyone. Great to be with you once again. Happy New Year.
In celebration of our first holiday season in Waukesha, WAUK Radio would like to say thank you for welcoming us into your homes, your schools, your businesses, and your vibrant neighborhoods. It was also our honor to broadcast the 59th annual Waukesha Christmas Parade, sharing the inspiration and magic of the season as our community continues to heal and shine.
Hey, Mayor Riley, yep, he's going to come by for a quick hello. Mayor, we brought the mic out just for you, Mayor.
Hello. This is great. This is beautiful.
We're really glad you're here. Chief Daniel Thompson, great to see you. Say hello. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. God bless everybody.
All right, thanks so much.
Together, we are Waukesha Strong.
And thank you all, of course, for listening and being a part of this broadcast. On behalf of Civic Media, I'm Mike Groot.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you from all of us with the Civic Media Radio Network and your local stations, the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.